week, we started this new sermon series, a new sermon series we're calling Loved to Life. And it is this idea that God actually sends his son down to live among us. And that the ultimate goal of God coming to live among us is to help us to understand the heart of God in our everyday, ordinary lives and extraordinary lives. Okay? And I think that what we see happen when we look at the Old Testament and kind of leading up into the story of Jesus entering in, which we would read in the scriptures and call them the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, is actually Jesus coming into the tension to restore to the people what their belief and understanding of the heart and nature of God was. Okay? So this period of time, which we call right now, we celebrate leading up to Easter, we call it Lent. This season of time was about Jesus coming and helping to try and reorient the minds of the people. They become obsessed a little bit with some things that weren't healthy, that weren't helpful. And they were addressing those direct actions, but they were losing the heart of what God was really about. And so Jesus comes in to demonstrate the heart of the Father. That's essentially the life of Jesus. That's what it was about. And so we see him having conflict. And we see him entering into tension with people because their idea of what God was like needed reorienting. And the reorienting, like we talked about last week, creates tension. Right? Remember that last week? We used this rope image. We're going to do it again. Okay? Because I think it's super helpful. Malachi, okay, somebody else? You know, any other young people here? Well, oh, you're pretty young. Here you go. Okay, we're going to play skip rope again. No, right, that when Jesus comes on the scene, Jesus comes and he enters into the tension that lives in the middle. Okay? Are you with me? So they already have their idea of what things should be. And it's pretty far off, actually, from what Jesus is wanting and hoping for them. And so he enters into this tension, and he creates some tension too. Okay? So I want you to hear that, that the tension in our stories and our lives is not always an indicator that something bad is happening. Okay? Because I think we often do that. We make an assumption that it's, okay, sit that down for a second, but be ready. Okay, because I'm going to ask you to jump back up again. All right, so Jesus enters into this tension. Okay, now the way that we're going to talk about lived into life, right? Jesus comes, he says, I have come that you may have life and have it to the fullest. Okay, this is what was going on. Giving life back to the people. True, joy-filled, free life. Okay? That's what was ultimately kind of like going on in this big story. Now, here's what we're going to try to do throughout this whole sermon series on this thing, is that we are going to try our very best to talk about this from the vices to the virtues. How does he take us from our vices to our virtues? Now, in some churches, some different traditions, and here as well, we talk about it differently. We talk about it like sin. Okay, so how does he take us from sin, okay, or a vice? Or actually, another way that we talk about it is just sometimes our stupidity. Okay, so just a couple of categories over there. Okay, like over here to this side of virtue and freedom, right? And last week, wisdom we talked about. Okay, so over the last 100 years or so, there has been in the church, and I want to say this as clearly as possible and as quickly as possible, over the last 100 years, there has been a focus in the church on this side of the equation a lot. Okay? The sin and the vices and like all of those kinds of things. Okay? And I think, to be quite honest, if we were to be honest with ourselves as the church, I think we would have to say that we have focused on it so much that people coming into the church might get the impression that our sin is the only thing that God sees when he looks at us. Because we talk about it that much. Okay? And sadly hidden in that is this truth that God was actually and has always been about love. That it was about this deep-rooted love that he created all things. He created you and I in his likeness, in his image. Okay? And so that even though, so what gets hidden here is that even though we have tendencies towards those things that we were not created for, those things which hurt us, right? We have forgotten that our lives are actually made and we were created for deep love, deep connection with God and each other. You hear that? And each other. Okay? So and Jesus refers to that, and he talks a lot about that. The relationship with God, with each other, and all of creation was actually what your body was made for. Your body did not come equipped to deal with these things over here. Right? It came created and equipped to deal with these things. And so we have this like broken tension that takes place in the middle. Okay? You with me? I know it's crazy. Okay? But Jesus came that we might have life and have it to the fullest. Okay? So, understanding our tendencies, this side, but living into what we were actually made for. So last week, we talked about pride and pridefulness. And pridefulness, right, real quick, pridefulness, right, we can get our head in the clouds because we think actually the whole story is all about us. Right? So every situation, everything flows through how it affects us because we think we're the center of the story, and this is where pridefulness becomes very destructive. Right? And then the tension all the way over to here to wisdom. Wisdom being a great self-awareness of where we fit in the grand story of God. Okay? That we're not actually all of that, but we're not actually nothing either. We are a part of this story. So from pridefulness over here to wisdom. And we talked about humility over here, and wisdom is the thing that takes us across the tension. Okay? And so you can see we put pride and wisdom up there today. Okay? So on the cross from last week. This week, oh boy, this is going to be super fun. Okay, we need our people back with the ropes. Okay? Here's what we're going to talk about today. Oh, boy. I don't think this is going to be you, Malachi, but you're going to have to hold it anyways. And the vice for today, sloth. Okay? Sloth be one of his vices? No. Actually, yeah, no grass growing under his feet. Okay? So, and this is a weird one. We are going to talk about it from sloth to faith. Okay? What does it mean for us to make our way between sloth and faith? Okay? To live here in this tension part, because there's some stuff that goes on inside the tension part as we learn fully, more fully, who and what we were made for and how we were made. Okay? So, in today's culture, here's what we got to do. We got to define, I think, in order to help us, we got to define sloth. Okay, so in today's culture, sloth is defined as basically, there's a word that goes with it. What is it? Lazy. Okay, so in today's culture, we would say that ultimately, the opposite of sloth is not faith, is laziness. Okay, and here's the thing that's so damaging about sloth in our context is that in our culture, we define laziness as one of the worst things. Because our culture that we live in today is obsessed with productivity. So anybody who is not being productive, right? We can very quickly call them lazy. And we're prone to it, actually. We do it even to ourselves, right? Because the objective in our culture, here in North America, not just, we can't just say in today world culture, in our culture today, we're obsessed with productivity. So anyone who is not being productive is therefore lazy. Okay, so I'm going to make you stand there a little bit longer, okay, you guys? Sorry. So the solution, when we think that sloth is defined as laziness, then the solution, right, somewhere in the middle here is just get off your butts. This is a little more direct word we could have used, right? Get off your butt and get to work. That's like the solution, if that's the way we understand the word sloth. Okay? But what if there was a different way that they were understanding the defining the word sloth when they started talking about this? Okay? So sloth has actually two meanings. One is lazy, or the inability to get moving. Okay? A slow starter. Just has a hard time. Right? Actually, what I'm learning more about that is actually it's less about an ability to get moving when it comes to busyness. It's actually more about trying to figure out what's the first thing to get moving at. Right? So some of the folks that we would say are lazy, it's actually not that. It's actually a more difficult challenge to figure out, well, where do I start? Because once they get started, that's not the case. Right? Some of us are more prone to this, okay, than others. All right. So what if there's a different definition? And there is. So get this. This is how they would have understood this word sloth. Okay? It comes from a Latin word. So sloth comes from a Latin word called acidia. Okay? You say acidia? Okay. There's a word in the beginning of that. Sounds like acid. Okay? So out of acid comes acidia. Out of acidia, this is the definition of acidia, a deep sense of not feeling worthy enough. Okay? So all of a sudden, this definition goes from lazy to actually understanding a sense of value and worth. If despair has set in, and you don't feel worthy enough, right? Then why on earth would you work hard and try hard? You hear where I'm going with this? So when we talk about this middle space then, and we just say, well, just hurry up and get busy and produce something. Actually, we may be asking a person suffering and in this particular area, we may be asking them to do the exact wrong thing. In fact, it may turn over, as psychologists would talk about it, as a distraction from dealing with the truth of what's really happening. You with me? Okay. So now we're talking about worthiness, a sense of worth and value. We are a little bit of laziness, don't get me wrong, right? But we are talking now about something much, much bigger. Remember last week, we talked about pride on this side and humility on this side, and we said, well, the answer to being prideful isn't just to be more humble and say you're humble. Right? Remember, I think the example I said is like, it's like as soon as you say you're cool, you're not. Right? Well, the same is true here. It's like, as soon as we say, okay, I'm not going to be slothful, so we can say we're productive. Right? The question I would have is, why are we so productive? What is our obsession with being so productive? In fact, I would be considered, some people say this to my fault, that I'm a fairly highly productive person. But if I am being productive just for the sake of being productive, so in other words, if I'm going fast nowhere, am I really further along than a person who's struggling with sloth? So for those of you who are saying, well, this morning is not for me, because I'm super productive. And my question for you and my challenge for you and your soul is, are you productive for the right reasons? And are you producing the right things? Because productivity in our culture can be great. We have cell phones and all kinds of awesome gadgets because somebody was being productive. But are we doing those things for the correct reasons with the heart of God present? You with me? Okay, so busy people who think you're not, this doesn't apply to you. And that you got to ask this question while I continue on with the sloths here. Okay? Are you busy doing the right things that are helping you? All right. So, now here we are. Definition. Lazy? We'll hang with that one a little. But more importantly, struggling with a sense of value and worth. Am I worthy? Okay? So how do you take somebody from being having a sense of despair around their value over to this side of faith? Okay? Here's the best I can do. I need one more person. Somebody? Tara, come around the back here if you can. Yeah. The word and the challenge then is to teach. And Jesus comes into this place is to understand and work on our receptive heart. Okay? Here's where I'm going to go with this. That Jesus enters into the story and he begins to teach. Right? And he begins to teach them their value and their worth. The very fact that the word we use is incarnate. The very fact that God sends his son to be present among us and live among us is to show us that we were so valuable that he would come and live among us. To take away this sense of unworthiness. And so the work, the spiritual, the soul work that must be done in us is to learn what it means for you and I to be receptive to the great divine gift that God has given to us. Right? So practically, what does that look like? Right? How does that actually play out in your life and my life and all those things? You know, there's some telltale ways of actually knowing if you're a receptive person in your actual regular life, and one of them might be, you know, when somebody gives you a gift that you don't deserve, how do you receive it? Right? What words come out of your mouth? What does it actually do to your heart? Does it create anxiety or stress, right? Because this happens, right? Right? We often do this. I don't deserve this. Right? I heard a story actually this week of somebody that had received a pretty awesome gift. It was a tool, and that's pretty awesome. If I was to receive a tool, that would be awesome. But he received this tool, and he knew how much the tool cost, and he gave it back. Okay? He gave it back because in his mind it was too much. Real quick. What does that do to the heart of the giver? Right? Refusing to receive a gift. Right? You have to remember that giving and receiving is a two-way deal. Right? Think about that, the heart of God. When God sends his son, gives his son, what does it look like when we can't receive it? We continue to live in a land of unworthiness. Right? So how do we work on being receptive to this truth that actually God gave it and he wants you to receive it? Okay? And here's why, maybe for your sake, I'll let you sit down. Okay? So, yeah, just put it right on the table. It's actually perfect. Here's what's so fascinating and interesting about why we would say faith is on the opposite side of sloth and receptivity is in the middle. You know why? Because faith, get this, faith is a gift. Okay? Hear me loud and clear. Faith is a gift. Now, we're going to talk about some practical ways that we practice our faith, but faith ultimately is a gift. Get this, Ephesians, all right, 2:8-9. Here's what it says. By grace you have been saved through faith, and it is not of your own doing. It is not of your own doing. It is a gift of God, not a result of merit, so that no one can boast. When Jesus sends his son down here to live among us, he sends it as a free gift. So as we make our way towards the cross, we have to remember that, yeah, it's true. You did not earn God's love. And you will never earn God's love. God's love, God's sacrifice of his son, all of the stuff that we talk about that the whole of the church is built around, is actually built around a gift. If you are in a place where it is so difficult to believe that he would give you that gift, right, then there's this challenge to understand fully what it means to live and practice our faith. Are you with me? Like, this is tricky stuff, I realize. But you can't make your way from here to this side over here to faith without working on your receptivity to truth, to God's love, to God's sacrifice, to the things that he has done for you and I. You may not feel that you are worthy to receive this gift, but this is what's fascinating. He says you are. And not only does he say you are, he shows you that he is, that you are. Sorry. He shows us, and he does it in this grand act of choosing, like we talked about last week, to make himself a servant, to serve his Father in heaven for the sake of demonstrating God's heart all the way to the point of death on the cross. He believes you are worthy. And so the questions we have to ask ourselves is, what does it mean for us to be receptive to the great divine gifts that God gives us? What are the roadblocks and the things that stand in way of receiving those kinds of gifts? And if it's your pride, like we talked about last week, then remember, it's like smoke. Pride is like smoke. It clouds our perception of ourselves and everybody else around us, and it makes us the center of the story. If you're the center of the story, then you already believe you are worthy. See how these two are working together? That's weird. I didn't even think about it. So I was reading into the next chapter and doing some real study, and I realized, oh, pride and sloth, they're like buddies. One thinks it's all that, and the other thinks it's none of that. And they both destroy and break down and hurt our relationship with God and with each other and with all of creation. What does it mean to be receptive? Well, I think there are some things we could do. I do think that learning to live into faith happens over time. In other words, being receptive happens over time. It's not something that you just have one time and then you have all the faith. Right? I don't have all the faith. That's one of the things, the questions that came to mind was like, how much faith do I really have? Well, I actually realized I don't have all the faith this week. And I have to continually practice, and I do that. I do that here at church. I do that in conversations that I have. I do that in my prayer life. I do that when I listen to do different podcasts and things like that, and I realize that there's just so many people out there with more faith. And I want that faith. And so I think, well, I just try harder to have more faith. That's the answer, right? But actually, that's not the answer. The answer is, how receptive am I to believing that God really does, really has given me all that I need for the journey? I'm a 7 on the Enneagram. We don't actually believe that's true at the core of who we are. It's part of our brokenness, right? What does it mean to be receptive? And when it comes to receptivity for me, honestly, one of the practices that comes to mind is the gratitude. That learning to be grateful for the good gifts that God has given you. Being grateful for those things. Even being grateful for the gifts that people have given you. right? This is one of the practices of teaching our soul to be more receptive to our value and our gifts. Complicated, huh? It's kind of complicated, I know. I'm trying to make it as simple as possible, but where do you find yourself on this tension? Right, tension, we've decided as of last week, tension is a given. Life with Jesus, life with others, tension. It's not going away. It's not even an indicator that you're doing it wrong all the time. It's a reality. It's a place where God teaches and shapes and moves us. Okay? All right. Here's why gratitude is so important. Our faith is a gift and is worked out as we continue to open ourselves up in order to receive it. That's the work. Open up to receive it. Okay? So in the church, we take communion. It's one of the practices that the church has been doing since Jesus did it at the Last Supper. And what's interesting about receiving communion, okay, is that communion is a tangible way that we celebrate the sacrifice Jesus made for us so that we might be forgiven. It's like a tangible thing that we do. Okay? When we receive the bread and, in our case, the juice, right? When we receive those gifts, right? We are actively and physically demonstrating our openness to receive the divine gifts of God. It's like a practice. Right? So communion is more than just saying, oh, this is like a memorial thing. Right? This is not just a memorial thing. This is an activity that we do to continue to teach ourselves, both physically and spiritually, what it means to receive a true divine gift of God. So when we take communion, that's what's actually taking place. It's not just a memorial thing we do. This is an active receiving of something so that we might move into something that makes us more whole and more free to live and to enjoy all that life has to offer, which was the ultimate plan of God in creation. With me? So in a second, the kids are going to start, it's going to get loud in here in a second as the kids kind of make their way back in here. But I want you to consider that as you take this communion, that this is you actively choosing to receive a divine gift. This isn't just about remembering some tradition. I'm not a huge traditionalist. It's not just about that. It's about allowing your heart and soul to be open to the gifts that Jesus gives today. All right? All right. Okay. I'm going to wrap up with this sentence and then I'm going to lead into these words. So where sloth, right, is a posture of inactivity and unworthiness. Okay, here it is. This is the sentence. Keep the whole thing going here. Where sloth is a posture of inactivity and unworthiness, faith practices receiving it with gratitude anyways. Okay? Faith is a practice of receiving it anyways. All right? And so when we go into communion today, this is about choosing to receive the good gift and being receptive towards it. All right. I'm going to do this by heart and by memory rather than reading it. As Matt was reading earlier, there is this story. And as the story goes, Jesus gathers with his disciples at one of the most important religious holidays of the religious calendar. And they had gathered there to celebrate the Exodus. They had gathered there to celebrate the moment when God had freed their people from slavery in Egypt. This is what happened. When they gathered in this meal, Jesus does something weird. Okay? You hear me? Jesus does something weird at the meal. something that made them really, really uncomfortable. He'd said some things already. And in this moment, he stands up and he takes this bread, is somewhere in the middle of this party and this meal, and he breaks it in front of them. And it was awkward and it didn't pull apart very well. And he says these weird words. He says, "This is my body, which is broken for you. Eat this in remembrance of me." And then they went on and ate some more. And after supper, he took this cup and he gave thanks for it. And then he says something even weirder. He says, "This is my blood shed for you for the forgiveness of your sins. Drink it in remembrance of me." Can you imagine what it felt like? Jesus is doing these weird things at this meal. And then he goes on and he says, "For as often as you eat this bread and you drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until I come again, and we will drink together." Communion, the Lord's table, whatever tradition you come from, the Eucharist, is about practicing receiving the divine gift that God gives us. And we do that together because it was given to each of us. And we do that with freedom and without judgment. And so one of the things that we believe here at the Covenant, in the Covenant Church in our, at Lake Ridge, is that if you feel that you are ready to receive this, then we want you to come and take it. There's not an exam that you have to take or any of those things, because we believe this is about you and God. And so come. Come to the table not because you have to or because it's some religious tradition that you have practiced for your entire life, but come because you genuinely want to allow your soul to be receptive to the divine gifts of God. Amen?